All right, so let's begin. So today's daf is Mem Vav. We're going to start towards the middle of Nun Hamad Bay. So remember again, thank you. Our shiur today is sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Martyr for the yahrzeit of Mr. Martyr's mother, Hinda Bas of Aaron Yosef, and I hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah. So if you remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit, the Gemara was speaking about the Machlokis and the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanon about how many stands there were in the Heichal, in the actual Kodesh. Because remember again, the Kohen is using two different bloods for the purpose of sprinkling on Yom Kippur, the Dam HaPar and the Dam HaSoyer. And he's not using them together, they're always used one after the other. So the Rabbanon said, no problem, we have two stands. Two stands, one for the Dama Prime, one for the Dama Sawyer. Rabbi Huda says we don't have two stands. The Gemara is trying to understand, why does Rabbi Huda hold that we don't have two stands? So the Gemara said it must be that why? Because Rabbi Huda holds that ksiva, writing, labeling, is not enough of a safeguard to ensure that people aren't going to mix things up. And therefore, even if you appropriately label each of the stands, Lamaisa, the coin may still make a mistake, and therefore we don't like that. So the Gemara tries to prove or disprove this particular assertion by quoting the Mishnah Masechet Shkalim. So the Mishnah says the Mishnah talks about the idea that there are 13 different collection boxes. Now, Rabbi Huda said that there was not a collection box for obligatory burnt offerings. Okay. So that the Gemara tries to understand why Rabbi Huda says that. So the Gemara talks about the 13 different collection boxes. So this is where we left off, actually. The Gemara says, Tiklin Chad. We left off Tiklin Charetin. It's actually 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines down from the top. Nun Hamud Beis. Tiklin Charetin, what does it mean? There was one for Nushkalim. Elu Shkalim shall call Shana Vashana. That refers literally to this year's half shekel collection. Call those Nushkalim. Remember, I was saying, what was the half shekel? What was the half shekel used for? Right? It was used for, again, Karbanos Tzibor. Right? Karbanos Tzibor, communal offerings. Tiklin Atikin. Old shkalim, what does that mean? Mishalo shakal ishtakid, someone who didn't give his shekel last year, yishkal shana haba, he brings it this year. See, even though, again, remember, he missed last year's collection, but he still has to bring that money for now, for this coming year. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Yishkal shana haba, v'nostan l'shofar shal tiklin atikin, v'hagizborin nosnim oso l'shiyari lishka, Shalishtakid, Shemehen Bonin Choma Seir Migdoloses. So I was like, what would you do with this collection? So remember again, we saw in Shkalim that, and this is very interesting, they were always left over half shekel. They never used up all the half shekel collection for Karbanos Tzibor. So what do you do with leftover half shekels? It was used for building improvements. It was used to bolster the walls and towers of Yerushalayim. So too the Gemara says, these Tiklin Atikin, these old shkalim, were essentially mixed in with what? With the leftover half shekels from last year. And all of that was used for infrastructure. Next, Kinin. What do Kinin refer to? Hein Torin. This refers to doves. Gozle Ola. What does it mean, Gozle Ola? Hein Bnei Yona. This refers to pigeons. The Kulan Olos Divi Rabbi Huda. And Rabbi Huda holds that all of these birds were offered up as Olos. Remember, we spoke about before that yesterday, that the obligatory bird offerings refer to which Karbanos? Refers to Karbanos brought by Zav, Zava, Yoledes. Now, when you brought an obligatory bird offering, one of those birds was for a Chatos, one of those birds was for an Ola. In what we'll call the Dava bird offerings, everything is offered as an Ola. These words of Rabbi Huda. And I will say, now here's what's interesting. Now what does come out from this whole discussion? Very exciting. What comes out from this whole discussion is that Rabbi Huda does hold that labeling is enough. I didn't know that Rabbi Huda holds that labeling is enough. Because I will say again, there are 13 collection boxes in 13 shofros in the Beis HaMikdash, each one for a different purpose, very different than the other, except the 6 that are there for Nadava. And yet Rabbi Huda holds the fact each of them are labeled, and the labeling is enough to ensure that the money is put in the right one. So how can you tell me that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of labeling when, again, the 13 shofros were labeled? To which the Gemara says, Ki asa Rav Dimi Amrar. So I'll say, so here's the question now. So let follow this train of thought. Remember, we assumed that according to Rabbi Yehuda, why is it that there was not a collection box for obligatory burnt offerings. What did we assume the reason for that was? Because we were concerned that the monies are going to get mixed up. Someone's not going to read the labeling on the particular shofar, and they're going to deposit their money in the wrong place. So, for example, I have to go ahead and bring an obligatory burnt offering. And what happens? I accidentally put my money in the Nedava burnt offering. What's going to be the problem? It can't work. Why? Because the Nedava burnt offering is offered how? Ola, and my obligatory burnt offering has to be Ola and Chatos. So Rabbi Yehuda, so we thought that Rabbi Yehuda figured people don't read signs, essentially. People don't read signs. They don't read instructions. And therefore, we can't put an obligatory burnt offering collection box there because they're going to deposit the wrong one. But it's clearly not true. There are multiple collection boxes for multiple different needs, for money that serves different purposes. And yet the whole setup is predicated on the idea that what? That what? That people read instructions. So obviously, again, people do read. So Rabbi Yehuda, what's the pshat? What's your problem? Why won't you put a collection box for obligatory burnt offerings? To which the Gemara says, Ki asra avdini amar ma'arava. In Eretz Yisrael, they explain Rabbi Yehuda's position in the following way. Gezeira mishum chatos shemesu ba'aleha. Oh, what are they concerned about? They're concerned about Rabbi Yehuda, that what? That if somebody drops off and deposits obligatory burnt offering money, they may die. And what happens if they die? Well, say something very interesting. You cannot offer a chatos whose owner died. Meaning, if you have an ola, if you have a shlamim, those can be offered even if the owner of the carbon died. But a chatos cannot be offered. What do you do with the chatos? What do you do? So we'll say you take that money. The Gemara says, yolich osol yam amelach. We have this expression that sometimes certain monies that cannot be used for any particular purpose are thrown into the Amalek. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Gzer Mishum Chadash Mesubala, Shema Mes Echam in Abailim, Shenosnu Ma'os Peshofer. Maybe one of the people who had to bring an obligatory word offering died. But again, this is if you were to have an actual shofar for obligatory bird offering. Somebody's going to deposit their money and they're going to die. And what happens? The Chavan Diyesh Bahen Chatos, Havilu Mos Chatos Shemesubala. Now you can have chatos money mixed in there, and chatos money of a chatos owner who died. V'hein hol chos liyam ha-melach, and that money cannot be used. It's supposed to be thrown into the Yam-Melach. V'neim tzu'um u'ravos makshiros, u'psulos osun v'hein me'at ha-robes. So we'll say, what are we concerned about? Here's going to be the problem. If, let's say, you have an obligatory bird offering collection box, and Reuven comes along and puts in his money for obligatory chatos, and Reuven dies. Reuven may die. And what happens if Reuven dies? All the money is messed up. Why? Because now you have chatos shemesu ba'aleha money mixed in with the rest of the money. You don't know which money is which, and therefore everything becomes invalid. Therefore, that's the reason Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want the collection box for obligatory bird offerings. To which the Gemara says, but 1 second, umichai shinon. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, the way this read is that we're choshesh that maybe someone's going to die. So the Gemara says, do we operate that way? Is that really the way we operate, that we operate based on the fact that somebody may die? Just the opposite. Vahatana, we learned, Hashaliach Hatos Mevdina Sayom, Makriven Oso Becheskas Shukayim. What does Halacha say? So let's say Reuven lives overseas. He dispatches a chatos. He sends a shliach with a chatos. Now let's say, again, it takes a long time for the money to arrive in Yerushalayim. We offer the chatos on the assumption that what? That he's alive. We'll say, this is a general klan halacha. I've mentioned this before. Because even before we spoke about, well, this will come up in Gittin. The Gemara has a very interesting case of Hashaleach Get Mebedina Sayom. A man sends a get with a shaleach from overseas. So the Gemara asks the question, how do you know, potentially, by the time that the get arrives to the woman, maybe he died? Maybe he died. So the Gemara's answer to that is, Lo Chai Shina Lamisa. We don't assume people die, which of course sounds strange. Of course we assume people die. But we assume is that somebody has a chazaka of being alive until when? Until they're not, right? Until they're dead. So the only time you ruin your chazaka that you're alive is when you're dead. So therefore, the Gemara says over here, we're not choshesh that somebody who deposits money in the chatas, in the obligatory bird offering shofar, is going to die, because we're not choshesh for such things. So the Gemara says, no. So what's the case? Ela mishum chatas shemesu ba'ala. Oh, no. What's the case? I will say, the case is where an owner died. What Rabbi Yehuda is concerned about is not maybe someone will die. What Rabbi Yehuda would be concerned about is in a case where if you were to have a shofar for obligatory bird offerings and the owner of a chatas were to put in his money and then we were to know that he does die. We're concerned about a case where he vadai dies. So Gemara says, okay, so then again, because if you know that he's dead, then what do I know? I know that his chatas money is mixed in there with the rest of the shofar and that will invalidate all the monies. To which the Gemara says, but why should it invalidate all of the monies? The Nivrar Arba Azuzin, the Nishti B'maya, the Hanach Nishtaru. I have a great idea. Go ahead, choose four Zuz. Four Zuz are both sides, the basic amount for a Chatas burnt offering. Choose four Zuz, and what should you do? Go ahead and throw it into Hamelach. Or in other words, Rabbi, what is the Gemara suggesting? Employ the concept of Breira. What does Breira mean? Breira means retroactive clarifications. So I do something now, and what I do now retroactively clarifies an event that occurs in the past. Or in other words, what the Gemara says is that why don't you just go over to the... Okay, so let's say now we're refining the case. What Rabbi Huda is really concerned about is the following situation. Imagine there is a collection box for obligatory bird offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. Reuven walks over to it, deposits his money for his obligatory bird pair. Nebuch, Reuven walks away, has a heart attack, he dies. Okay, now we've got a problem because we know Reuven's money is mixed in to that obligatory collection box. So the Gemara says, what is it? And we know that you can't offer up a chatos whose owner died. You have to take that money from Yam HaMelech. But I don't know which money is Reuven's. The Gemara says, no problem. That's what Breira does. Breira is able to go ahead and create retroactive clarification, a retroactivity approach. So go ahead, just choose any four zuz. And what? Retroactively, it's clarified that that's the four zuz of Reuven. Throw it into the Yam HaMelech. Shalom al Yisrael, everything's okay. Because you're going to also remember, now we've clarified this. We're not really choshesh that somebody's going to die. That we're not choshesh for. We're only choshesh for the specific case of where we know someone did die. Gemara says, no problem. If that's really your case, very easy to rectify. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, only one problem. Rabbi Yehuda, less le Breira. Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of the concept of Breira. He doesn't hold of retroactive clarification. So Gemara says, Minalan, where do we know this from? It's a very interesting case. This nan, maybe you'll say it from the following Mishnah. What's the Mishnah? Someone buys wine from Kusim close to Erev Shabbos. Well, so I take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, remember, we've spoken about the Kusim a number of times. So remember, Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur, had a very good approach in terms of conquering territories, and that was to uproot people from their indigenous homes. So he went ahead and moved everybody. So one of the nations that he moved to Eretz Yisrael were a people from the land of Kuta. So Kuta, okay, so they come to Eretz Yisrael, what happens? They're rampant idolaters. Not like just recreational idolaters, like real, mamish, hardcore, from idolaters. And they introduce idolatry everywhere in Eretz Yisrael. There's a major outbreak of lions, the Navi says. What happens? As a result, they realize the God of Israel is powerful. They convert. That's actually very, we were speaking about this on Wednesday morning. They convert. But what happens? They were found to be worshipping idolatry after they converted. So there's a whole fundamental machlokes as to the nature of their conversion. Are they Jewish or are they not Jewish? And this comes up all the time in halacha in terms of how you treat their religious practice. So, for example, in Chulin, we'll learn about that if a kuti shechts, it's a shechita good or not. So here the Gemara is saying like this. One thing we know for sure is that a kuti does not separate out Shumas and Maestros. And this is, by the way, before, interestingly enough, later on historically, the wine of Kusin will become included under the gzera of Stam Yenom, of wine in general that you get from Israel, which is problematic for a whole variety of different reasons. But right now, the issue with his wine is what? He doesn't tithe it. Also, listen to this case. It's Erev Shabbos, close to sundown. I buy wine from a kusi, and I don't, it's interesting, Rashi points out, I don't have the kalim. Right? So either I don't have the kalim, or I don't have the time to separate out Shumas and Maestros before Shabbos. And remember, you can't separate Shumas and Maestros on Shabbos itself, because it's tikkun mana, literally it's the remedying or the rectification of a particular item, which is not really a malacha in and of itself, but it's doma la malacha. It looks like a malacha. So what do I do? But I want to drink the wine. So what do I do? Says the Gemara, this is very interesting. Omeid va'omer, I stand and I say, stand, of course, is la dafka literal. It means I say, shnei lugin shani asid lahafish hari hin truma. So I'll say the two lugin that I'm ultimately going to separate out in the future are going to be truma. Nun vav. Excuse me. Asara, 10 lugin. will be Maaser Rishon. Rabbi will say Truma goes to the Kohen, Maaser Rishon goes to the Levi. Then Tisha Maaser Sheni, nine Lugin will be Maaser Sheni. Umechol v'shoset miad divrei Rabbi Meir. And I will say again, it's just an interesting point over here. When it comes to the Maaser Sheni, so what do? I automatically redeem it and transfer in sanctity onto money. I look at Rashi for just a moment. Umechol, Rashi says, Maaser Sheni almos. I transfer the sanctity of Maaser Sheni onto money. Dimashiyish biyod l'takin yitakin. V'shosamin ata aroves. Well, says, listen to this. Now, what does it mean I transfer the sanctity of the Maaser Sheni onto money? See, remember, what's my problem over here? My problem here is I don't actually have utensils. I don't have another cup or another jug to be able to actually take off the chumas and maasers. But Maaser Sheni, I can very easily remedy right now. Because Maaser Sheni, remember, refers to the time that I myself eat, but I have to take it up to Yerushalayim. And one of the allowances that the Torah gives me is that I can go ahead and transfer the sanctity onto money, take the money and spend it to Yerushalayim. So essentially what the Gemara is saying over here is, we're not going to let the Maaser Sheni sit in the wine because that's easily rectifiable right now. But says Rashi, Ukishiyulo Kalim, when I have utensils later on, Yafrish gam hatruma u'maiser. I'll separate out the truma and maiser afterwards. Tisamchinon abrera. Belomar zeh haya truma v'hu shasechulin. So we'll say, in Rabbi Meir's worldview, what do you do? So now I designate two lugin for this, nine lugin for this, 10 lugin for this. But what am I separating? What am I actively separating? The answer is nothing. The answer is nothing. So what happens? Later on after Shabbos, when I separate out my truma, my Maaser Rishon, it becomes what? It becomes retroactively clarified that which I am separating out now is in fact that which I designated prior to Shabbos. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Concept of Breira, retroactive clarification. On the base, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Osrin. But I've also on the other hand, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say that it's Osir. They say that it's Osir. You can't do this. I will say, why would they say it's Osir? Alma, Ein Breira. Now, Bepashtos, the reason they say that you can't rely on this is why? Because they don't subscribe to the idea of Breira. Don't tell me when you separate out, you know, on Matzis Shabbos, your Truma and your Maaser, that the Lugin that you're separating out retroactively, the Lugin that you separate, it's not true. It's not true. It's true. See, I will say, here's what's interesting. This is not a discussion for today, but there are some, for example, who will go ahead and buy into this concept by solids, but won't buy into it by liquids. Why? Because if you have a pile of grain, you could designate a part of the grain. I could say, you know, the southeast corner of the grain, that's going to be my Rishon. And right next to that, because again, you have a solid mass, and it's not as, but liquids, so they don't subscribe to this idea of Breira. Alma in Breira. Therefore, you see that what the tribute doesn't hold the Breira. And I will say, again, so why is this important for us? Because this would seem to shed light, again, as to why Rabbi Yehuda does not allow for a collection box, a shofar, for obligatory bird offerings. Because again, what is Rabbi Yehuda concerned for? That the owner is going to die. Well, actually, let's say that differently. What is Rabbi Yehuda concerned for? A case where the owner died. All right? He died. Again, not will die, not may die. He died. And then what? His chatas money is mixed in with everybody else's. And now you've just proven what? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of Breira. And therefore, again, Rabbi said, there's no way to tell which money is the dead guy's money. If there's no way to tell which money is the dead guy's money, then what? Then Lamaise, again, it invalidates everything. That's why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want the collection box for obligatory bird offerings. To which the Gemara says, one second, you might. How do you know that the reason Rabbi Yehuda does not like this case is because of Breira, meaning the wine case? Dilma, shiny hasam kediktani taima. Maybe the reason is, as we mentioned before, Mr. Martyr, thank you again for your sponsorship. Your mother's neshama should have an aliyah. Don't be sorry. So the Gemara says, shiny hasam. Maybe the reason over here is something different. Maybe the reason why Rabbi Yehuda rejects this case is another reason. What kediktani taima? What's the reason? Amrullah Rabbi Meir, because they said to Rabbi Meir, meaning they is Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, who all say that this case of verbal designation of the wine or verbal separation within the wine does not work. Because what are they concerned about? Ia tamoda shema yibaka hanod v'nimtza shoset tevala l'mafreya. Because of all say, Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Meir, I don't understand. How can you rely on this system? Are you not concerned that what? The wine node literally means the wine skin. So are you not concerned that the skin is going to rip, the barrel is going to break? Or in other words, this whole thing is predicated on the idea that the wine is going to be in existence on Matzah Shabbos. But maybe it won't. Maybe the skin will rip. Maybe the barrel will break. And therefore what? The nimtza shoset tevel mafrein. Let's play this out. Let's say you use Rabbi Meir's model. And on Erev Shabbos, you go ahead and you verbally designate the truma and the meiser. And then what happens? On Shabbos, the barrel breaks and the wine spills over the place. Then what happened? Then remember, it turns out that you have actually consumed tevel. You have consumed untithed produce. It wasn't my intention. I did not mean to commit Navera, but Lemaisa, I did. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't understand how you could. So according to Rabbi, what you're suggesting over here is Rabbi Yehuda, it is not an issue of Breira. According to Rabbi Yehuda, this is an issue of practicality. I'm concerned about the fact that you know that the skin is going to bust or break, the barrel is going to break, and you're going to end up drinking Tevel. Look at Rashi. I'm sorry, not yet. Amar Lahem, so well said. Rabbi Meir gives a very profound answer. Rabbi Meir says, L'chishayivaka means what? Is, you know what? We'll worry about that when it actually happens. So look at Rashi, L'chishayivaka. L'chishayivaka nachashlo. When it happens, we'll worry about it. Kilomar, what that really means is, lo chayshina l'shema yivaka. We are not choshesh that the wineskin is going to rupture, the barrel is going to break. The efshad, the muscle of the shomer. The truth is, if you're that concerned about it, then put someone, you know, point someone to watch over it. Of course, I've always thought to myself that this is an incredible, one of these fundamental life machloksim as well. You know, it's always an interesting approach in life as to how much pre-planning you could actually do and what setbacks you actually have to anticipate or plan for. So Rabbi Yehuda seems to say when structuring a life approach, you really have to take into account all of the possibilities. And therefore, if your approach cannot address all the possibilities, then the approach is flawed. Rabbi Meir says, no, what you have to do is what? You have to be reasonable. You have to plan your approaches to life. You have to structure your mahalik in life based on that which is reasonable and probable. What's reasonable and probable is wineskins don't rupture on their own. Barrels don't break. And therefore, again, we're going to structure an approach to life. That's where we're going to go. And I think, again, not our time for today, not a topic for today, but you'll think about it at your Shabbos table. I think that there's a lot of profound life wisdom in both of these opinions. It's not a right, it's not a wrong, but it really is two different mahalchim in life. Okay, so Ella, so we'll say, so now again, so we're back to square one again, because remember, we're actually getting very excited. You're just a very reverent group, so keep your excitement inside. But again, the reason why we're getting excited is because we thought we finally understood Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. We thought that we finally understood why Rabbi Yehuda says there's no collection box for obligatory burnt offerings in the Beis HaMikdash was why? Because he doesn't hold the Breira. Now we've just established. Now, by the way, that might still be true. He might not hold the Breira, but here's what we know is you can't prove that from the case of the wine. Because it's possible that Rabbi Yehuda even holds a Breira. But the reason he doesn't accept the wine case is why? Is because Lemaisa, again, he's concerned that the wine skin is going to break, it's going to bust, and you're going to be in trouble. So I will say, so we're back to square one. Ella, mititani ayo. So rather, again, the reason Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow the collection box for obligatory burnt offerings is based on a statement of ayo. Now what's interesting is we're going to get a little bit of a review of Erevin. Yesterday we did a little bit of Shgalim. And we're going to do a little bit of Erevin. Element of Tani Ayo. Tani Ayo. What did Ayo say? Ein Tani Ayo. Rabbi says, Ein Adam Masne Al Shnei Dvarim Ke'echad. A person cannot make a stipulation about two things as one. Ella, Imba Chacham LeMizrach, Eruva LeMizrach. If the Chacham comes from the east, his Erev is in the east. LeMa'arav, if he comes in the west, Eruva LeMa'arav. His Erev is in the west. But in both directions, not. What is this talking about? Look at Rashi. So what does this mean? A person can't stipulate regarding two things. So we'll say, here's the case. A person, this is Eruvei Tchumen, right? So remember, again, we learned a person has a Tchum of 2,000 Amos from the outer edge of the city in which he lives. But let's say now I want to extend my Tchum. Why do I want to extend my Tchum? Because I heard that a particular Talmud Chacham is coming to town, not to my town, but to within 4,000 Amos of my town. And I want to be able to go hear his shir on Shabbos. So what do I do? What's the problem, however? He says, the issue over here is, but I want to place an Eruv one to the east and one to the west. Why? She'im yavo im shema im yavo shnei chachamim. Because what may happen? I heard two Talmidei Chachamim are coming to town. Echad the Mizrach, the Echad the Maruch. One is coming to the east, one is coming to the west. V'lomar le'eza mehen she'ertza eilech l'machar. So we'll say, so what happens? I don't want to choose right now. I don't know what I'm going to be in the mood for, right? One is doing lamdas, one is doing a little bit of hashkafa. I don't know what I'm going to be in the mood for. So what I want to do is I want to place two Eruvim now, right? Then tomorrow, essentially what I'm going to do is I'm going to, through Breira, I'm going to retroactively clarify which Erev I want. So the Gemara says, Rashi says, Lefi Shekinias Erev Ben Hashemashasi. Because remember, I will say, an Erev establishes what? An Erev establishes Makom Shavisa, a domicile. That domicile must be established prior to the onset of Shabbos. Ukisha said, Borer the Macher Osa Sheyirtsa. So I will say, what happens? So the Halot Rabbi Huda says, well, what I want to do is tomorrow, I want to choose which Erev on these. Obviously, you want to say you can't have two Eruvim, right? Because you can only extend your Tchum in one direction. Because remember, one of the things we've learned is what you gain in one direction, you lose in the next, in the other. So, all right, if I take an extra 2,000 Amos to the east, it means I'm limited in terms of my mobility on the west. But I want to choose tomorrow which one I want to go to. So Rabbi Huda says you can't do it. Why? Lo samchinan abrera. We don't rely on brera. Lomar huvrar litzad chacham zeh kana shvisa emesh. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Huda there, I'm still reading in Rashi. So Rabbi Huda says it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Because we can't rely on Breira. Yet, Ella al Chacham Echad, the Enio de la Eza Ruach Yavo, who masnet. But I will say, listen to this case. But if you have the following case, one Talmud Chacham is coming to town, right? One Talmud Chacham, but what? But what? I don't know which direction he's coming from. So what do I want to do? Again, I want to establish an Erev, masnet. In Bala Mizrach, Eruv Eishal Mizrach Yikne. Then Bala Ma'arav, Eruv Eishal Ma'arav Yikne. So what do I do in that case? I put an Eruv to the east, I put an Eruv to the west, and I essentially say, whichever direction the Chacham comes from, that's the direction I want my Eruv to be in. Ve'ilu l'kan u'l'kan, al shnei Chachamim l'makom she'erza eilech lo, dein brera. So we'll say, here's what's very interesting. So on one hand, now look back at the Gemara for just a moment. So Rabbi Huda says, one person cannot make a stipulation about two things like one. What does that mean? So what does Rabbi Huda allow for? Rabbi Huda allows in the following case. There's one Talmud Chacham coming to town, but I don't know if he's coming from the east, I don't know if he's coming from the west. So what do? I set up two Eruvim, and I say, whichever direction the Talmud Chacham comes from, that's the Eruv I want to work. Rabbi Huda says that case works. Aval lekan ulekan lo, but what doesn't Rabbi Huda allow? There are two Talmidei Chachamim coming to town, one coming from the east, one coming from the west. And what do I want to do? I don't know whose shir I want to hear, so I want to set up two eruvin. And tomorrow I'll decide which one I want to use. Rabbi Huda says he can't do that. Why not? Why can't I set up an eruv both to the east, both to the west, for both rabbis, and decide which one I'm going to tomorrow? De'in breira. Din Breira, because Rabbi Huda doesn't subscribe to Breira. But one second. Le Mizrach u'ma'arav nami in Breira. Now, here's what's interesting. What's the Gemara's Kasha? The assumption is both of these cases utilize the same halachic principle of Breira. Right, Rabbi Huda, remember, whether it's the case that Tuta Min Chachalim, they're certainly coming from two directions. I just don't know which shir I want to go to. And so I set up to a room and I want to choose tomorrow. That uses Breira. And so does what? Yeah. So does one where there's one Talmud Chacham, but what? I don't know which direction he's coming from. And tomorrow, I'm sorry?
You have one option.
But I still, either way, both cases, at the onset of Shabbos, I don't know which Tchum I'm going to use. I don't know which one. So the Pashtos, and both will be clarified later on. If that's the case, both are utilizing Breira. If that's the case, then why does Rabbi Huda allow it in the case of the one Talmud Chacham and not in the case of the two? Oh, I'll tell you why. Vam Rabbi Yochanan, because I'll tell you. Kishekvar ba chacham. Because Rabbi say again, actually, the case of Talmud Chacham is a case of what? The Talmud Chacham is already within the Tchum prior to Shabbos. It's just what? I don't know Which section is coming from? Rambam said that's not Breira. See, Breira refers to situations that cannot be clarified now. In this case, the Chacham is already in one of the directions. It's just what? I don't know which one it is. Says Rabbi Yehuda, that's not called Breira. That's called Chisaron Yediyah. So if Rabbi Yehuda allows for that case, because again, the Chacham is already present. The reality has already been established. And Rambam said, what Breira does is, Breira says there are certain situations where a halachic reality has not been established. And then what? At some future date, circumstances become clear, and those clear circumstances allow for a retroactive clarification of a prior halachic status. To which Rabbi Yehuda says, this case does not require retroactive clarification of prior halachic status. Why? The halachic status is clear. It's just that what? Just that what? I don't know which one it is yet. That's Rabbi Yehuda allows this. So Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to Breira. He only allows the Torah in this very specific case. So the Gemara says the following. Look at Rashi. So in reality, Rabbi said the Chacham already came ben Ashmashas. And what's the Chap? Dekana Eruvo lo'os saharuach. Rabbi said, remember, because what did I say? When I placed the Eruv to the east, what did I say to the west? That whichever Eruv, whichever direction that Chacham comes from, that's the Eruv I want. Essentially, let's say the Talmud Chacham is coming from the east. When he comes from the east prior to being a Shemashos, what happens?
That
Erev has been activated before Shabbos already. Before Shabbos. Therefore, there's no Breira. There's no attractive clarification. He was already in the Tchum before being a Shemashos, which means that my Erev already solidified prior to being a Shemashos. Fine. So we'll say, now we are really back to square one. Because again, see, here's what we have. So the Gemara says, Zahashta da'amina Rabbi Yehuda, ein Breira. Haksiva is space. So I was like, so now here's what we have. Actually, I take that back. We're not back to square one. We've actually established the fact that what? Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira. So now let's make a full circle. So here's what we know. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow for the collection box for the shofar of obligatory bird offerings to be in the base of Mikdash. Why? Because he doesn't subscribe to Breira. Right? And therefore, the concern is that monies of a chatas, of an owner that died, are going to get mixed in, and you can't clarify them out, and it'll ruin the entire collection. So therefore, no obligatory shofar no shofar for obligatory bird offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, now, let's go back. Remember Rabbi Osai, let's go back to the case of the two stands. Rabbi Yehuda says there's not two stands, there's only one stand. Now Rabbi Osai, we assume that what was the reason for that? Because people mix it up. Why will people mix it up? Because people don't pay attention to writing. The case we brought as a support that people don't pay attention to writing was the fact that Rabbi Yehuda does not have a shofar for obligatory bird offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. But now what have we proven? That's not the reason. The reason why there's not a shofar for obligatory bird offerings is not because people don't read signs. It's because what? Ein Breira. Because we're literally concerned about a real halachic reality that somebody is dead, somebody died, and their money is mixed in. It's chata shemesu ba'aleha, and it'll ruin the entire collection. Oh, so now we go back to square one, which is, so why can't there be two stands? So people do read signs. People do follow directions. If that's case, Rabbi Yehuda, why don't you have two stands that they send for the two bloods? So v'hashta damirin Rabbi Yehuda ein breira haksiva isrei. Now that we've established Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the breira, therefore what? But yet, that means he does hold that written instructions are sufficient to turn to making mistakes. Why don't you have two stands? Because it makes life a lot easier. And label them. To which the Gemara answers, Mishum chusha de kohen gadol lavadaite. The Gemara gives a very interesting answer. Why? Because what we're concerned about is that the kohen gadol is very taxed that day. He's very tired. He's weakened. And he's not necessarily going to pay explicit attention. So even though normally labeling something would be sufficient, the kohen gadol is somewhat compromised on Yom Kippur because he's fasting and he's doing all of this avodah. The ilo teimahachi, because if you don't say this, belok sivanami. The truth is, you don't even need to label these stands to distinguish between the bloods. Why? Because the bloods themselves are not similar. Number one, high nafish v'hai zutr. There's a lot more blood in the receptacle for the par than there is a lot more par blood than there is sur'ir blood. Why, Rabbi Osai? Why?
Bigger.
Very simple. The par is a much bigger animal. V'chitem olam akabale kule. Maybe you'll say that what? That you don't take all of the blood of the par into the klisharis. That's not true. When you shecht the animal, you must receive all the blood. Remember, when we say all the blood, refer to the lifeblood. That's the blood that spurts out when you shecht. You have to get all of that blood. How do we know that? Shenemar, ve'es kol dam hapar, yishpoch al yisod ha-mizbeach. Torah says what? You have to take kol dam hapar, which means we'll say number one. So again, v'chitema. So number one, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that even if you didn't label the stands that hold the blood themselves are obviously distinguishable because the pashtos, the klisharis that holds the blood of the par, must have been much larger than the klisharis that holds the dam of the sawyer. So maybe you'll say v'chitema dilma mishtapach mineh. Maybe you'll say that you pour off some of the blood. True, you're makabel all of the blood of the par in the klisharis, but you spill some of it off on the mizbech or in the drain by the mizbech. The Gemara says there's another difference. Hai chiyur v'hai sumach. I both say the blood of the goat, or I should say the blood of the par is much darker, and the blood of the goat is much lighter. So I'll say the point the Gemara is making over here is there are clear and distinguishable differences between the two bloods. Elo, mishum chul shed de kohen gadol lavadayte, hachenami mishum chul shed de kohen gadol lavadayte. So we'll say the Gemara answers, you're right. This has nothing to do with ksiva. It has nothing to do with being able to distinguish the differences. Yes, we assume people follow instructions. We assume that people read signs. We assume that people see the difference between these. So why? So what are we concerned about over here? We're concerned about that the Kohen Gadol is taxed. The Kohen Gadol is tired. The Kohen Gadol is fasting. And the Kohen Gadol may not be paying explicit attention to detail, which is interesting because, you know, Yom Kippur is all about detail. But okay, in any event, Rabbi Huda is concerned that maybe the Kohen Gadol is going to be compromised a little bit. He may get mixed up, even though, again, everything's clearly labeled. The bloods themselves look different, but this is his concern. Therefore, says Rabbi Huda, in order to avoid any kind of getting mixed up, there's only one stand. Because by definition, by only making one stand, then what? Then Lamais, again, you assure that he can never get the two bloods mixed up. So the Gemara says, Hahu, the Gemara raises the story. Now, you should know that Rambam actually paskins like the Rabbanan in the Mishnah, that there were two stands. That there were two stands, not one. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Hahu, the Noches Kamei Derava. So there was a particular individual. Noches Kamei literally mean went down before Rava. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says, Hahu, Shliach Tzibor, the Noches Kamei Derava. So we'll say, listen to this. It was Yom Kippur now. And there was a chazan. The Gemara used Lashon Nachis Kamei going down. Because we'll say, the Gemara discussed in Maseches Brachos that there was a custom of having the Shliach Tzibur be in a lower spot than the rest of the Kila, based on the Pasuk Mima'amakim Kirasich Hashem. So you often have this Lashon of the Nachis. So the Shliach Tzibur was davening before Rava. And what happens? He was reciting Musaf on Yom Kippur, and Musaf on Yom Kippur has the Avodah. And what did he say? Amar, Yatzavei Nichwa Kan Sheni Shevehechol. And what was he saying in his recitation? He spoke about the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he put the Dam HaSa'ir on the second stand. And then what does it say? Then what did he say? Natal Dam HaPar. He took the blood of the Par, the Inyach Dam HaSa'ir, and he put down the blood of the Sa'ir. And what does Rav say to him? Amarlei Chada Kirei Banan. So what Rav said is, you're mixing and matching. Because Rav said, when you say that he placed it on the second stand, that's like who? That's like the Rabbanan, there was a second stand. But then when you make this statement that he took the Dam HaPar first, and then he put down the Dam HaSa'ir, that's like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because Rav said, Rabbi Yehuda, you can only hold one blood at a time. Ema, hiniach Dam HaSa'ir v'natol Dam HaPar. So Rav said, you have to say it correctly. Like we pass like the Rabbanan, which is what? He would come and what would he do? He would put down the Dam HaPar, he would put down the Dam HaSa'ir on the second stand, and then he would remove the Dam HaPar from the first. So I will say, halacha l'maisa, we pass like the Rabbanon, which is that there were two stands in the base mitzvah. Apparently, the Rabbanon disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda. They say, no, we're not choshesh mishum chosh of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is not going to be get mixed up. He's not going to be compromised. L'maisa is on his game. He's paying attention to detail, no need to worry. Let's come a little bit weiter. Remember, what does the Kohen do? After he does all of the sprinklings on the inside, he comes to the outside and does the same thing. And he sprinkles on the kapores, on the parochas, on the curtain, opposite the aron. Turn around, aron. The pasuk says, so you shall do in the Olamoid. What does this mean? You should also do this in the Olamoid. Kach maze behechol. The same way that you sprinkle in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you have to sprinkle in the Hechol, in the Kodesh, on the curtain. Ma lifnai v'lifnim achas lamala v'sheva lamato. Just like inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you sprinkle once on top. Remember, we already spoke this yesterday. Lamala, seven lamato, midam apar. Kach maze behechol, so do we do in the Hechol. U'kashem shlifnai v'lifnai v'lifnim achas lamala v'sheva lamato midam asoyer. And just like, again, inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we do one sprinkling above, seven below with the blood of the soyer. Kach maze behechol. So we'll say again, the same way we do 1 and 7 for the Dam Hapar in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, same way we do 1 and 7 for the Dam HaSoyer in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we repeat these two sprinklings while standing in the Kodesh, right? And this time we sprinkle it again opposite the curtain. Let's just finish this braisa. Hashochin itam besoch tumasam. What does it mean when it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells with us even in the midst of our impurity? So beautiful. Afilu b'shas shem t'meyin shechina imohem. Even when what? Even when we are tamei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells within us. Amar lohu hahu tzaduki Rabbi Chanina. So there was a tzaduki that said the following to Rabbi Chanina. Also remember, a tzaduki is a person who didn't believe in the oral tradition of Shabbat Pe. Tapam nun zayin. Hashta bari t'meyin asum. So the tzaduki said to Rabbi Chanina, he said, look, you Jewish people, you are Tameim. And if you're Tameim, how do we know this? Tumasa bishulahal. Literally, because from the pasuk in Eicha, her tuma is on the hem of her garment. So I both said, what the Tzaduki was saying was the following. The Navi in Eicha refers to Klal Yisrael almost as an Isha Nida, as woman is a Nida. Just like a woman who's a Nida cannot be intimate with her husband, so Klal Yisrael was a Nida with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Tzaduki says, oh, you see from here that your God is separated from you. Because how does the Navi describe you? The Navi describes you again, and the way the Navi describes it is, the woman is a Nida, and her Nidus is apparent on the hem of her skirt. So her impurity is obvious to all. So the Tzaduki said to Bechanina, you see, your God has left you, because just like a husband must separate from his wife when she is a Nida, so to what? So to the Maisa, your God has separated from you. So he says, Rabbi Chanina responded, Amar lei, tachazi maksiv behu. Look what it says by us. Hashochin itam besoch to umasam. What does it say by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That God dwells with us even in the midst of our impurity. Afilu bizman shein tmein. Even when what? Even when we are tamei, shechina shiruya b'neihem. The shechina ultimately dwells within us. Rabbi saying this is such a beautiful idea. Yes. And by the way, the Navi Dafka uses the metaphor of a nida. Why? Because when a wife is a nida, although a husband cannot be intimate with her, the marital bond still exists. Physical intimacy may be off limits, but emotional intimacy and connectedness is still very much present. So the Navi says, Klal Yisrael, when they abandon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yes, we're separated. Perhaps the bonds of physical intimacy may not be present, but the connection, the marriage, is still very much intact. Back to one side. Stop over here.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, 8:15. 8:15. 8:15.